taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday Americans.
Okay, it's been on the news, it's been everywhere for days. Biden's Ministry of Truth, it's been bouncing everywhere. And some of you may have asked, Paul, why have you not been talking about this on the Constitution Study? Well, there's one very good reason. See, the only thing we had was a kind of a half set aside statement by a Department of HHS official in a committee hearing in Congress. There were no details. In fact, he didn't even refer to it as the Ministry of Truth. He referred to it as what? The Board of Disinformation. I guess it was a Disinformation Regulatory Board, something. Here's the point. From what little I could find out about this board, its primary function is to somehow deal with foreign disinformation. Now, why is this important? Because all the hype and all the hyperbole may be distracting from what's really going on. So I want to take some time today and take a look at what little we know about this Ministry of Truth, put it in some context, understand what we may need to wait and still look for, but then look at some other examples of truth and misinformation and see what we can glean from all of these things and what we can use to help live our lives freer than others. So hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me today. Today, we're finally going to take a look at the so-called Ministry of Truth and looking at truth in general in America. Now, there have been a lot of outlets covering this. I even got asked to do an interview on this that I kind of respectfully backed off from. I said, I want more information first. Now, the official title is the Disinformation Governance Board, and its purported purpose is to coordinate countering misinformation related to homeland security, focus specifically on irregular migration and Russia. Now, get rid of the political gobbledygook. What is it talking about? The original, or I should say the stated purpose of the board is to coordinate how the government is going to react to misinformation. For example, we've heard reports that within Russia, the Russian people are being told that Russia is winning the war with Ukraine easily, there are no problems, everything's going fine. That's an internal problem. But you see, we were also told for a year that Hunter Biden's laptop, that was all Russian disinformation. We were told a lot of other things. Now, the question is, how is the government going to respond to it? And that's, I guess, what this board is supposed to do. It's to kind of come up with ways of how do we deal with misinformation. Now, the problem you run into, to me, is twofold, both of which are constitutionally based issues. Problem number one, who decides what's misinformation? See, that's always the biggest problem you deal with misinformation board anywhere, not just government, anywhere. Because what is misinformation to one person is the God's honest truth to another. So there's a problem there, and again, I don't think we have enough information yet to really get overblown about this. This is worth looking at. Because the second problem is this pesky little thing called the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or infringing on freedom of speech and the press. So how can Congress make a law that authorizes an executive agency to infringe on a person's right to speak freely or to publish freely? By the way, press doesn't mean the news media. That's a misnomer. Press, as defined in the 18th century, was anybody in the art or business of publishing. I'm a member of the press because I publish a website. I publish this radio program. That is considered part of the press. So how a government deals with misinformation is very important. For example, there were reports that Hunter Biden's laptop is misinformation. Okay, if the government's response, if this DGB's response says, okay, the government needs to provide evidence that it is misinformation, that is how we will counter misinformation. That is absolutely legitimate. If they have evidence, by the way, we have this report, we have this witness testimony, we have information that counters the information that we believe is misinformation. That is absolutely legitimate. If, on the other hand, the countering of misinformation is to convince outlets to suppress that information, that is a violation of the Constitution. You see, the Department of Homeland Security is a creation of Congress. It was created via legislation. Therefore, Congress cannot authorize it to do something it's not authorized to do under the Constitution, including the First Amendment. You see why I was slow to jump on the bandwagon? It's not the question of how do we deal with misinformation. It's how we deal with misinformation. Now, government and bureaucrats have been so bad at how they deal with misinformation, focusing primarily on denying, prohibiting, suppressing information they don't want others to see. And you compound that with what's been going on in social media, everyone's first reaction is, oh my God, it's the Gestapo, it's the Ministry of Truth. That isn't necessarily what we have here. And I say necessarily because it just isn't enough information. So before you start running around with your chicken and your head cut off going, it's a death of free speech in America because we've got a Ministry of Truth, we need more information, at least from what I've seen. Maybe there's more information out there that I have not aware of, but it is something to be concerned about, but not to go crazy about. No, there are much more serious instances of things like misinformation that the American people should be considering. Well, for example, the current administration officials have been suggesting that gas and oil production are at historic rates. According to the Interior Secretary, production is essentially higher than it's been in a couple of decades. Because on the federal lands, we're doing what we need to do, and we're following the law and making sure that we're moving those issues forward. Now, that's really strange because in February, U.S. oil production was down about 3.9% compared to November of last year. Now, that's about 500,000 barrels a day. We went from 11.8 million barrels a day in November down to 11.3 million barrels today. Per day. Again, just shy of 4%, but that's down. That's not historic rates. Neither historically high rates nor historically low rates. And it's funny because they're saying they're staying within the law and they're doing what they have to do. Because just after taking office, President Biden signed an executive order pausing all oil and gas leasing on federal lands and shutting down the Keystone Pipeline permit. Now, pardon me, but I didn't think in our form of government, the president made rules, they made law. If the president can simply allow or disallow permits, that's not done by law, that's done by executive edict. At least these are permits to drill on federal land. But these aren't doing anything to produce more. No, it's designed to do exactly the opposite, to decrease our overall production. But you see, that to me is how you deal with disinformation. We don't suppress the fact that Biden has under the current administration, Biden has done many things to decrease our oil production, that our oil production has in fact decreased. Neither do we shut down people because they say something wrong. We counter bad facts with good facts. We counter bad information with good information. That is how we deal with misinformation. That's how we should deal with misinformation. And another way we should deal with misinformation, exposing the truth. For example, last year, the Federal Bureau of Investigations conducted 3.4 million searches of Americans' electronic data without a warrant, at least according to reporting in the Wall Street Journal. The annual statistical transparency report shows that the FBI has conducted almost 3.5 million searches of your data without a warrant. Now, unless they can show exigent circumstances, meaning that someone's life or evidence was imminently in danger, those are 3.4 million criminal acts. Now, that is not information that should be suppressed. As a matter of fact, that's information that should lead a U.S. Attorney's Office to do an investigation to see if there's maybe charges to be filed. You know, it's funny. I was talking to my accountant, and he wants me to go to an online bookkeeping system, and I refuse. I will not put my books online. Not because I have anything to hide, but because I know the FBI conducts illegal searches. I know that the IRS conducts illegal searches. Why in heaven's name would I make it easier for them to conduct an illegal search about me? And for all of those who were so worried about, you know, Trump being a tyrant and you know, becoming a dictator, do you really, another nasty little statistic coming out. FBI's warrantless searches of American data has more than doubled from 2020 to 2021. Who is the one infringing on your rights? Who's the one performing illegal searches? Who are the ones that are stealing your rights and your data? Oh, yeah, it wasn't the Trump. I mean, the Trump administration was doing some of it, but the Biden administration has now taken it to the next level. It's going up. Now, if the idea of misinformation, of this misinformation board, were to say, well, no, that's just misinformation. No, this is data. This is facts and data. And this stuff, this is important. To me, the fact that your own government is spying on you, illegally collecting data, is much more injurious to free speech right now than this board, this disinformation governance board that so many people are apoplectic about. Now, don't get me wrong. This disinformation governance board has the potential of being very, very damaging. But we don't have enough data yet. It's worth looking at, but not to the extent that I've seen so many people reporting about. They're, again, worrying, but not catastrophic. And the reason I bring it up is how much are we being distracted from what the FBI is doing? Their illegal searches. This is data coming out of the Director of National Intelligence report. How much are we being distracted from? Oh yeah, no, we're producing more oil than ever. No, you're not. That's a bald-faced lie. From the fact that the Biden himself has placed restrictions on domestic oil drilling, and that has to have an impact on the price you pay at the pump. You see, it's interesting because disinformation can come in many forms. And sometimes getting everybody to focus on this one little saying that one person said distracts us from everything else that's going on. So I'm not saying we ignore it. I'm not saying it's nothing. But I'm saying it's not worth it. It's not, to me, it hasn't risen to the level of hype that we've seen yet. Now, if more data comes out, if more reports come out, if people start showing that, yes, this board look to suppress free speech and freedom of the press. Then we've got something to get apoplectic about. But for now, take a deep breath, pick your head up, look around you, and see all the other ways your rights are being actually infringed upon, rather than focusing so much on something that might infringe on your rights. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, a couple of things I want to tell you about. I'm putting together my 2022 tour. I'm starting to lock in some dates. I haven't really updated the website yet, but it's coming. Please head to constitutionstudy.com/tour. I will start putting data on there as soon as it becomes available, as I'm locking in dates and locations. If you would like me to come speak at your event, if you'd like me to come attend your event, if you'd like me to come speak to your group, all you have to do is ask. Go to, again, constitutionstudy.com/tour. At the bottom of the page, you'll find a form to fill out that'll tell me you would like me to come speak, and we'll do everything we can to make that happen. So again, head to that website, constitutionstudy.com/tour. Keep an eye out as tour dates are added, and I would love to come speak to your events. I'd love to visit every state in our union and spread the blessings of liberty in as many places as I can. Now, I don't know about you, but I get to the end of the day and I start having I get fuzzy headed. I have a hard time focusing. I'm easily distracted. And I know people reach for the energy drink or the energy shot. Try something else. Go to healthycell.com. Take a look at their focus and recall. It boosts your short-term focus. It helps you with your long-term memory, all without the caffeine and the sugar, just using some vitamins. It's easy to use. It's easy to take. It works for me. And as an America Out Loud listener, you can use the code OUTLOUD to get 20% off your first order. So again, head to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD to get 20% off your first order.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking misinformation. Truth. Is there such a thing as truth? Now, in the first half, I did talk about the disinformation board that everyone's having a heart attack over, and I tried to put it into some context. There's no evidence it's as bad as it's being made out to be, but it is certainly worrying, so... if you want to hear more, go back, listen to the first segment. But now I want to go into this whole Elon Musk and Twitter thing. Well, actually, I want to go into the reaction to Elon Musk and Twitter. I'm kind of curious. I want to see what Elon Musk does with Twitter. Apparently, so do the Democrats in the Senate. You see, they're talking about calling him in for a hearing. They want to question him on his plans for the future of Twitter. Now, I want to remind you of a couple things. Congress, which is part of Congress, They have no inherent investigatory powers. Their job is not to investigate, it's not to execute the law, so they don't have investigatory powers. Yet they seem to use them willy-nilly to, well, intimidate people they don't like. Now, Senator Markey, who is on the Senate Commerce Committee, emphasized the importance about learning about Twitter's potential censorship and moderation policies. I find that absolutely laughable, and I'm going to explain why as we go through the rest of this segment. But I want you to remember, here you have Congress. They had no issues when Twitter was censoring Trump, when they kicked Trump off the platform. They didn't come, you know, they brought people in for hearings, but here you have a private individual buying a private company with the stated intention of making it more amicable to free speech, to getting rid of the censorship. And there are those in Congress who want to haul him before them and question him. What are your plans for your platform? Now, I understand the politics of it. And personally, I'd love to see Mr. Musk say, none of your business. Because it isn't their business. Until he has broken, even if he's broken the law, it is not Congress's business. They write the laws. They don't enforce the laws. If they don't like what Mr. Musk does with his platform, write a law to make him stop doing it. But that is the end. That's the extent of it. No, what we have here is political grandstanding and intimidation. And what I find absolutely amazing is this is all supposed to, because they're worried that about Musk and censorship. Well, they're also worried inside of Twitter, too. See, some internal messages were leaked last week, and they talk about a fair amount of Twitter employees were just going nuts over the fact that Elon Musk is purchasing the platform. Now, several of these messages were obtained by the New York Post, and they kind of show that the employees are afraid, they're angry, and, they show their general disgust at the very idea of free speech. Now, apparently, they had some big meeting on Slack to discuss all this, and one site reliability engineer said he physically cringed watching Elon talk about free speech. His words. The idea of free speech is cringeworthy? They referred to him by names and others, but I find it laughable that the same platform that deplatformed the sitting president of the United States, that suppressed and shut down an account for a newspaper that had credible information that could implicate a potential candidate for president, the person who eventually now sits in that office, and they're worried about what Elon Musk is going to do about free speech. They're not worried about free speech. No, I'm sorry. That's a laugh. They're worried that free speech might actually break out, that people might actually be able to say what they think on Twitter's platform. Now, I have this issue where people refer to it as the new public square because it's private property. And I have an issue with people who say, well, that's where your message gets out. No, that's one place where your message gets out. But again, it's a private platform. And if so many of the employees are so bent out of shape that it might, that's being bought by somebody with the stated purpose of returning it to a free speech platform, well, tells you pretty much all you need to know about how readily you accept the information that comes out of Twitter. If Twitter's not interested in free speech, why do people listen to it? Now, I post stuff I post my articles and stuff on Twitter so that people will find me, but I don't trust any. I don't sit there reading Twitter to get my news. I don't trust what they're saying because I know they're manipulating the system. And I've got more evidence coming up shortly. But before I do that, I want to note something else. See, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the sometimes infamous representative in the House, has introduced legislation to repeal Section 230 of Title 47. Now, I've talked before about Section 230, but so let me just give you the quick summary. The problem I have with Section 230 is the set that we're dealing with is the protections against lawsuit is simply too broad. It denies people the right to petition the government for a redress of grievance. Rather than saying that a platform cannot be sued or charged or whatever for taking down a post that is criminal or that is let's leave it at criminal. Criminal is the way I want to see it. If they could show that the post was some sort of criminal activity, it incited to riot, it violated some law, well then, yeah, you should not be allowed to sue them for taking that down. The question then becomes, the way Section 230 is written, basically anything that the platform thinks, you know, might be offensive to somebody, they can take down and claim that they cannot be sued for it. That is the problem. So here we have Marjorie Taylor Greene, along with a lot of other people who've talked about this, which says rather than swinging than just fixing the problem with 230, they want to get rid of it. They simply want to get rid of it, which means now all these platforms can be sued by anybody for any reason. You know, you didn't promote our platform enough. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. It's a sledgehammer to what is a important but minor problem. You know, if you have a tiny little tumor in your body, you don't get out the chainsaw. You get out a scalpel, or you hope the doctor gets out a scalpel. Yet here we have a chainsaw again because they don't like how Twitter's been manipulating the content on their platform. So we see some people that are terrified that, well, they won't be able to censor content on their platform. You have the other side, which is going crazy, saying, well, how dare you censor anything? We're just going to wipe you out. We're just going to crush all your protections. And never actually looking at what the law and the problem, in my opinion, actually is. Now, this one was interesting. I understand. Just because the Twitter board has accepted Elon Musk's offer doesn't mean that all of a sudden he owns Twitter and he's in control. It's going to take months for all the paperwork to get done and it's going to be a while. But I found this interesting. You have to remember, I live in Tennessee. I moved here, 7 years ago almost? So this is a hometown newspaper, right? The Tennessee Star reported on a story about Governor Lee's signing a bill to make ivermectin available over the counter. That is true. That is absolutely factual. The bill has been passed by our legislature. It's been signed into law by our governor. People in the state of Tennessee can buy ivermectin over the counter without a prescription. And for printing that information, the Tennessee Star was locked out of its Twitter account. Why? Because they say, well, the Star's reporting might pose a risk to public health. Huh? No, much more likely the algorithm has been trained. We talk about algorithms. Algorithms are not magical things. AI is not a magical thing. It is trained. It is taught. It's constructed to do something. And Twitter has configured their algorithm to block people who talk about ivermectin, even if all they're doing is reporting a factual story about something, a law that a state has passed involving ivermectin. Tell me there's not need for someone to revamp our social media. Tell me this doesn't show that Twitter itself is broken. It's a polluted cesspool. When simply stating making a factual statement about legislation gets your account locked. See, this is the part about free speech I think many people either miss or just don't want to see. Free speech is messy. Free anything is expensive. No freedom is free. So just like any other freedom, free speech requires sacrifice. There are costs involved. Maybe the only cost is having to listen to people you vehemently disagree with, regardless of how foolish or ridiculous what they're saying sounds. But free speech means we get to explore all ideas. And free speech is the only way I know to find the truth. And I know, nowadays, they say there is no such thing as truth. Truth is made up. No, there is a truth. 2 + 2 = 4, period. Pretending that 2 + 2 = 5 and allowing people to be shut down for contradicting you doesn't make it true. It isn't true because everybody agrees with it. There was a time in this world when everybody knew without a shadow of a doubt that the world was flat. That was true. And it was only when people questioned that we found out the truth. And now we have satellites that orbit the Earth and we can see the entire globe. But that wouldn't have happened if we didn't allow contradictory points of view. Science is based on the ability to contradict, to question, to challenge. If we shut that down, we do more than simply lose your ability to express your opinion. We lose the ability to seek the truth, and by which we lose the ability to grow. If I am not allowed to be exposed to challenging ideas, how will I ever grow? In Scripture, it says that you thought as a child, you talked like a child, but when you grew up, you put away childish things. And the idea that you can change reality just by asserting something and stamping your feet high enough, that's childish. Freedom of speech, freedom of the press are part of what has allowed America to become the dominant superpower that it is. It's not all of it, but it's a large part. Because when somebody did something that we thought was wrong, there were people that were allowed to challenge it. Going all the way back, look at slavery, look at women's rights, look at civil rights, look at anything that has changed significantly in the last 200 years. And it started with people who questioned the status quo. So whether it's Biden's disinformation board or the board and the employees at Twitter that are terrified that they won't be able to manipulate what people see anymore, it's more than just denying people the right to freedom of speech. It's literally denying them the chance to learn something new. The arrogance it takes to say, we know everything we need to know, that I am right and there's no possibility that I could be wrong, is that hidden underbelly of this censorship movement. Whether it's the arrogance of a government official saying, what you can and cannot challenge on a social media site based on their political opinion, or whether or not it's true that the FBI is searching your data illegally. I'm old enough to remember Watergate, when the media challenged the status quo and reported the difficult topics. Sadly, it appears those days are gone. Now it seems that media is part of it, social media is part of it, government is part of it, and more we see people that are isolated in their own ideas, that seek out the confirmation bias and refuse, just stick their fingers in their ears and refuse to listen to anything that challenges what they already believe. It's funny, many years ago, I was having a talk with a friend of mine about God. And it was very interesting because I would quote a verse of scripture and my friend would come back, well, I believe this or I believe that. And at one point, with a little bit of frustration, I said, so in other words, you're telling me what is and isn't real is based on what you believe, that you decide what is and isn't true. In other words, you're God. we have an excessive God complex in America, in Western society as a whole today. And it is not only destroying the foundation of our rights, it is destroying our future. We have Twitter because someone said there's a better way to communicate. And I don't care if people agree with me or not, I'm going to build it. Same with Facebook. Same with the iPhone. What happens when people are not allowed to disagree with the approved narrative? It's not simply dystopian. It is stagnant. Now, I have to take another break. But before I do, I want to remind you, you can listen to the Constitution Study live every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. Listen on our media players or our world-class apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. Just go to AmericaOutloud.com. You can find all the links there. Now, also, this program goes to podcast generally a day or two after it's heard on the radio. So you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you do me a favor, whatever system you're using, find that like button, that thumbs up button, that subscribe button, click it. It helps other people find the Constitution Study. It helps them join this discussion, this diversity of ideas. If you do that, you can help all of us to not only live free, but increase this diversity of ideas.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. There's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chance of getting sick. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray, provides an additional invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for six incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking about free speech and misinformation and mostly the search for truth. Now, to me, the search for truth is a very important aspect of living free. The ability to challenge information, to seek for what is actually factually true, and not simply deal with whatever somebody tells you. Now, I've been saying for 2 years that what they refer to as medical science is actually politics. The CDC, the FDA, the NIH, these are political bureaucracies, not really public health institutions. Now, the U.S. Government Accountability Office interviewed 16 employees from those three agencies, the CDC, the FDA, and the NIH. These are three industries, these are three institutes they're the point for dealing with COVID. Now, what they were looking for were the scientific integrity policies and procedures. How did they make sure that what was coming out of these agencies was scientifically accurate and not influenced by politics? Now, they published a 37-page report, and what they found wasn't good. You see, respondents from the CDC and the FDA failed to report political interference in the scientific decision-making process, in part because they feared retaliation. Now, some did say that they weren't sure how to report what they had observed. Employees from all three agencies also told the GAO investigators that they didn't report, make formal reports because they believed the leadership already was aware of the issues. Well, for example, in May 2020, a senior official from ASPR claimed that Health and Human Services retaliated against him for disclosing, among other things, concerns about inappropriate political interference to make chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine available to the public as treatments for COVID-19. Now, no formal reports of potential political interference were submitted at the federal health agencies between 2010 and 2021, which pointed a lack of guidance. Now, a few at the CDC and the FDA said they felt the potential political interference they observed resulted in alteration or suppression of scientific findings. Now again, if our ultimate goal is to find the truth, what does it say when those agencies that are supposedly giving us the information we need are being interfered with politically? Remember, the purpose of the CDC is to gather statistics about communicable diseases. The FDA is to regulate the safety information that goes into medicines. And the National Institutes of Health is a general health, public health agency. But what happens when the decisions, the information that is guiding policy, the information that's given to you, is done for political reasons rather than scientific ones? See, then it's not simply a question of your right to live free, but it's actually the consequences could be very great when information is either promoted or withheld, not because it's scientifically accurate, but because it's politically advantageous. Now, there's another area where we've seen a lot of political influence in the debate, and that comes around this idea of critical race theory. Now, CRT is a Marxist-based ideology, and it really came to the fore as parents were seeing their children taught at home, were seeing what was being taught, and let's say many of them didn't react well. Now, at the same time, you have teachers and administrators saying, "Oh no, CRT is not being it's not being taught in the classroom." But is that true? Now, Jonathan Butcher, who's an education expert at the Heritage Foundation, says that CRT is not just showing up in the classroom. He says it's been there for decades. He says, quote, "In the 1980s and 1990s, you have teachers becoming trained in the idea that America is systemically racist, that we should be teaching children, teaching students, not so much about what they share as Americans, but about their identities, the things that separate them and make them different from each other." Now, Butcher has written a book, Splintered: Critical Race Theory and the Progressive War on Truth, just to expose what's being taught. Now, I've said this before, the term critical race theory may or may not be part of the discussion, but are the ideas, the concepts being taught? And according to Butcher, yes, they've been taught because they were taught to the teachers starting in the 80s and 90s. In other words, they don't think of this as critical race theory. This is how they were taught to teach. Does that make sense? In other words, if you've spent your entire life using your right hand, you may not think of yourself as right-handed. That's just the way it is. And that is what I believe Butcher is trying to explain here, is that it's not so much that teachers say, "Okay, here is CRT, here's how you teach it." No. We have decades of teaching this idea that America is systemically racist and focusing on our differences, not our similarities. And obviously, this is going to have an impact on society. It's why it's so important to understand what your children are being taught. There's this concept called the Overton window. And the idea is, if you imagine a football field, right? It's a good way, I believe, to understand an Overton window. A football field is 100 yards long. But the team on offense, only has to move another 10 yards. And the idea is they get 10 yards down the field, and that window moves, right? So they start at their own 20-yard line. And if they can get past the 30-yard line, their window moves. And now their goal is a 40-yard line. And the more they move, the more that window moves. So that's kind of the idea of an Overton window. If you think about any spectrum, what becomes normal shifts. You know, if you can change the normal, change the standard, move it one direction or another, the next generation thinks that's normal. And that window shifts. And that's what he's explaining is happening or has happened with schools in America. So when a teacher and an administrator says, we don't teach CRT, yeah, I'm sure they don't have a class that's called CRT in U. But the concepts, the underlying understanding, the idea that America is racist at its core, that we need to be separated, not joined together. When I was a kid, we were taught America was a melting pot. You came from all over the world, and we joined, and we absorbed what was best of everything. That's not what's being taught anymore. Now, whether or not that's truly critical race theory or not, it's the concepts of critical race theory. It's the analysis. It's the foundations of these ideologies. And if you think it's bad now, what's going to be like in the next 20 years? When the children are in school today, grow up, have children of their own, and send them to public school, how much farther down the road will we be? And here's an excellent example of why the idea of multiple voices, multiple ideas, seeking the truth through differing ideas is so important. There was during a recent subcommittee meeting in the House, Representative Bernie Thompson during his opening statement that he was alarmed about unanswered questions about Justice Thomas's failure to recuse himself from decisions that we now know might have implications that impact his wife. This has been ongoing for a while. They've been attacking him, Justice Thomas, because his wife has a life. Now, testifying before this subcommittee, and Mark Pallotta testified that the left hates Justice Thomas. Why? Because he's black and he's conservative and he doesn't conform to the left's idea of how a black man should think. Well, this is interesting because Representative Jeffries then asked, what evidence do you have to support that incendiary charge? That is a very good question. The response was, when Chairman Bernie Thompson, we talked about before, calls him an Uncle Tom because of his views on voter ID and affirmative action, when in fact more black Americans support voter ID and with respect to affirmative action and college education, 62% oppose it. So that is the most vile, disgusting thing you can say. And so, yes, that's evidence. Now, Mr. Jeffries immediately tried to reclaim. He tried to gain control of the proceedings. He wanted to reclaim his time. And he said, there are a lot of vile and disgusting things. To which Pallotta said, you just asked me for an example. The notion that answer is, and some members on this side of the aisle and others have been called the N-word throughout different points in our lives, but lies the point you have a particular bias. And it's an overstatement, which is not surprising when you look at the balance of your testimony. And if Chairman Bernie Thompson has an observation to make, he's entitled to free speech. He then asks, can I give you another example? To which Jeffrey says, no. You see, they're more than willing to attack somebody, but when they're challenged and given evidence, we don't want to hear it. By the way, this isn't abnormal. This is the way most people react, especially before they mature into understanding you might be wrong. See, if we didn't allow the challenge. If Mr. And I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name, but if Mr. Poletta was not given the opportunity to point out the error of Mr. Jeffries, the basis for his charge of bias, well, then you'd never know. It's just, well, you know, Democrats, Republicans fighting amongst each other. No, we have evidence. By the way, yes, Mr. Thompson did call Justice Thomas and Uncle Tom in 2014. There's a lot going on here. It's why we have challenges. And, you know, there's an old saying in the law profession, never ask a question that you don't already know the answer to. Sadly, Mr. Jeffries didn't follow that rule. But think about it. Mr. Poletta made a claim. Mr. Jeffries asked him for evidence of that claim. Poletta provided it. When asked if he could give him another example, he was denied. Isn't that censorship? Granted, you're in a meeting and there's time limits and all that stuff, but think about it. What if Mr. Jeffries could simply say, oh, no, that's misinformation. That never happened. Would you like to see the tape, sir? No, that never happened. It's one of the reasons why I'm so particular about how we handle the term misinformation, how free speech is treated. Because if we go crazy every time someone says something that possibly could be seen as some form of censorship, we're like the boy who cried wolf. Again, I'm not saying the Disinformation Governance Board is a good thing. I'm saying it may not be as bad as we've all been led to believe. But it's important not only that government actors allow multiple points of view. It's just as important that you listen to multiple points of view as well. I know it's hard. We love to gravitate to what we agree with, but that's not how we grow. It's a lesson I've had to learn over the years, over the decades. The willingness to listen to somebody who challenges what I say, or who accuses me of doing something. To listen, give them their chance. Evaluate the possibility that, you know what, I might be wrong. They may have a point. It may not be the whole point, but there may be some truth in there. That comes from allowing different points of view. And if we give up on this idea of differing opinions, if anything we disagree with is simply labeled as disinformation and ignored, as I said, we don't simply lose the right to free speech. We lose the right to grow. You know, Benjamin Franklin in 1722, writing as Silas Duguid, said that without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the right of every man as far as by it he does not hurt or control the right of another. And this is the only check it ought to suffer and the only bounds it ought to know. See, freedom of speech is required for public liberty. And freedom of thought is necessary for wisdom. And the current attacks on both freedom of speech and freedom of thought carry much more weight, much more penalty than I think most of us have considered. I grew up in a generation when we used to say, I may vehemently disagree with what you had to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. It was a point of honor to fight for someone's right to disagree with you. Sadly, that day seems long gone, and I do miss it. Not because I miss what some people have said, but because I miss the wisdom of allowing a multitude of voices. So I guess, although I am not hyperbolic with the Disinformation Governance Board, I am very protective of freedom of speech. And I think we all should be. I think it is not only the cornerstone of America, it's the cornerstone of liberty, and is the cornerstone of science, of education, and of innovation. And if it's lost here in America, where will someone go to find it again? Now, I want to ask all of you, if you would please, head to AmericaOutloud.com. Make it your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. Take this program. Take all the episodes, the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos. Share it with friends and family. Make it part of your social media platforms. Let other people know that there are not only a diversity of voices, but there are others who agree with them. See, if you participate in the solution, well, then you're not necessarily part of the problem. And when you share this information, you share these ideas, these concepts of rights and freedom, you not only share good news, but you help secure the blessings of liberty.
Paid the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.